Welcome to the Swine Time Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Wayne. I'm one of the staff veterinarians here at Pipestone. I'm also one of the owners of Pipestone Holdings, and I'm also the host of the Swine Time Podcast, and I get to interview different guests about different topics. So today I have a couple folks with me, Aaron Little with our research and Carrie Pollard with our records bureau. And I wanted to bring them in to talk a little bit about genetics in general and what we've learned through some both research as well as observing actual production records. So I'll shut up and I'll turn it over to those two. And I'll start out by asking Erin to introduce herself briefly, and then I'll turn it over to Carrie. And then
yeah, thanks, Spencer. Yeah, my name is Erin Little, and I've been with Pipestone now for just under 9 years. I graduated from South Dakota State University with a bachelor's of science in animal science. Worked in Pipestone for a couple of years, managed a research barn, and then I went back to grad school and got my master's in swine genetics and statistics. So I have a lot of interest in genetics. I kind of nerd out over genetics, so I enjoy the science behind it. Since I graduated with that degree, I've been fortunate to my roles changed within Pipestone Research, and now the last 2 years I've been our director of operations with the research team and oversee our different research projects that we do in our research barns and then also in our field trials.
Okay, just to kind of describe it a little further, tell me if I'm wrong, but what you're doing is occurring in 4 or 5 different research barns that are commercial double 12 wean to finish barns with lots of pens and different feeder setups, but they're essentially a true commercial setting. In 4 of the barns, and then 1 is a smaller barn, the RB5 barn.
Yeah, so 5 of the barns would be a traditional 2,400 head wean to finish tunnel ventilated barn. And so within those barns, we have a feed system that tracks feed intake on the pen level. Then we have a pen scale, so we take weights on those pigs and pens. And there's 84 pens, so we get plenty of replicates. And so I like that it's a combination of, it feels and looks like a commercial barn. Then we can collect intake and mm-hmm. performance metrics down to the pen level. So it's a very controlled study with a commercial feel.
Yeah, and large observation number, which it's people will criticize research saying, well, it's based on 10 sows or 10 mm-hmm. pigs. And sometimes it is, but not in this case. You've got a lot of pens and a lot of pigs, so for a lot of power.
Yep. Yeah. I like to think of it as like, we're looking at a best case scenario for these genetic lines, right? Best case scenario, here's a top tier genetic potential for a genetic line, either a terminal line or a maternal line in terms of the wean to finish performance of their progeny.
Got it. So you're going to talk about things you've found through those research barns and your work with doing actual intentional research. Carrie, I'll turn it over to you. You have a whole different perspective on genetics, but it's based on a practical observation of records. So can you describe who you are, what you do, and what you're going to talk about?
Yeah, thanks, Spencer. So I grew up on a 200 sow farrow to finish farm, like many people. My genetic nerd out is that I was going to go to college and eliminate the rupture gene, because I spent lots of time fixing ruptures with my mother in the farrowing house as a kid.
Hey, Carrie, you failed. We still have ruptures.
Yes, I failed desperately. I aborted in college and said I didn't want to spend my time in a lab, and found my way to Mike Ellis's research lab at Illinois, and did my master's, but spent a lot of time as an undergrad too, doing a lot of real practical on-farm research. That thing I loved about that is being able to put it into practice right away on farms. And so I have been in Northern Illinois out of Bethany office for almost 18 years. And we joined Pipestone about 6 years ago, and I have found my way to the Farm Stats Group and work on trying to analyze all that 4 million pigs worth of data that we have coming into that system to help people make better decisions.
People might be listening saying, you just got 4 million pigs on what kind of records? Just describe that a little bit.
So FarmStats is our record service. It is done through the MetaFarms platform. And then we work to further transform that data through our website. And so producers can either work with an individual person within Pipestone that will help them collect marketing data, mortality data, everything we need, feed data, to create a closeout to figure for gains and conversions, mortalities for groups of pigs, or if they're more advanced groups, can enter their own data into MetaFarms, and we pull all of that together into farm stats. In 2023, we're going to have close to 4 million pigs in that data set. So it really gives us a lot of variability to look at.
Okay. And so within that data set, you got kill sheet data. So you got some carcass data. You've got closeout biologic data of mortality. You got feed data for conversion. You got daily gain, daily feed. All those things are pulled in. It's not a shallow data set. It's got a lot of information packed into it. Fair to say?
Correct. Yeah. A lot of ability to look at sources, genetics, health, you name it, we try to collect it.
Okay. It's impressive just the volume of information that flowed through and the way you've been able to peel it apart and say, this means this and this means this. So good stuff. We'll go back to Erin. We'll start off with some of the things she'd like to talk about. Erin, why don't you just talk about genetics, how, you know, the things you wanted to cover as far as how they've changed the potential for learning and the potential for differentiating better or worse genetics.
Yeah, I think, you know, not working for a genetic company, but within my role at Pipestone Research, and then also with the master's project that I completed, you know, we get a lot of opportunities to see and work with a lot of different genetic lines, and then also a lot of different genetic companies. And so you get a good look at, you know, how they're innovating and how they're progressing towards, you know, better animals, right? And so you know, a big thing, right, is selection indexes. And so as we continue to understand the genome of the pig better and are collecting data more accurately and then able to compute that data and understand that data even faster, I think it's cool. One of the most interesting things I see from the genetic companies is how they're providing so much more transparency with their selection indexes. You know, traditionally, right, we would think of a terminal sire, we would think of a terminal index revolving around growth and how fast and how quick can we get those pigs to market and how big can we get them, right? And I think that, you know, in the past few years, we see them starting to incorporate things like disease resilience, right, or robustness, how these pigs handle these environments that they're in. They're not all in perfect, pristine environments. They need to be robust. They need to be resilient. And so how can genetic companies do their part to modify or incorporate those traits into their index? Unfortunately, it's not as easy as, you know, switching on or off a light switch, right? Because it's not one trait per disease or per, you know, issue. But we're still seeing that they're driving towards that, and they're doing it in different ways. Mm-hmm. But progress is being made regardless.
Yeah, I should probably stop and just pause for a moment and say that we work with, I'm counting five different genetics companies. They do trials in our barns. We also see the results that Carrie's going to talk about on closeout, so they're observed with commercial production, these differences. But out of respect for them, we were not going to mention any names today, but probably just bring up scenarios about, you know, what we've seen in different places. And so without mentioning names, I'll say, all right, Erin, I remember one genetics company say, hey, we've got some PRRS resistance. And so we tried the semen, compared that to another line of boars, and significant difference. I mean, what would you say? In that case, it was close to double or half the mortality, however you want mm-hmm. to look at it, just by during a PRRS challenge. So this isn't ideal. This is we put pigs in a barn, and then we get them all sick. And that was really impressive that, wow, that was significantly better performance in the challenge of a PRRS break situation. That's fair to say?
That's fair, yep. And so actually, yeah, that project was my master's project. So it was it was a Pipestone Research trial, and then I was able to piggyback it on my thesis. And so know that data very well. But it was one of the first times in our research barns where we were, we infected those pigs with PRRS intentionally, and then we watched how wean to finish performance differed between two different commercially available genetic lines. One company saying that they had continued to modify that index to incorporate robustness in that index. And we saw that play out in that wean to finish performance.
Right. And that was repeated at that similar trial, not the exact same trial, but we repeated it a few times, and we saw a repeated observation that that line is better in the face of a PRRS challenge. Mm-hmm. You should also know that within a trial, it won't be just one company comparing its lines within the company. It's comparing company X versus company Y mm-hmm. versus company Z. These are big mixed trials that'll compare between companies. If you have a contact within Pipestone, either a veterinarian, nutritionist, a production person, this information is meant to be shared with our clients. Just that it's not appropriate to share it over a podcast here, other than that we did this and we saw these differences.
Mm-hmm. And I think there are limitations there with selection, right? You know, there are just so many different technologies that genetic companies are using. And, you know, I think in human medicine, right, we've seen with the CRISPR technology, how great of a tool that's been for human medicine. And I think that as the swine industry continues to utilize that, and other genomic tools, it will advance the industry even quicker.
Let's jump over to Carrie for a little bit. So maybe describe a little bit about what you've seen on the production data.
So the great thing we've had is the genetic advancement of the pig itself. This pig grows. I used to think we were going to top out at a 1.65 gain, 1.8s, 1.9s, even higher than that. This pig just continues to grow, and that's great. And that's the feedback we gave the genetic companies for years. We needed pigs that could grow. One of the things we probably are more frustrated with now is our mortalities. The mortality in percent tops has remained pretty steady over the last 7-8 years within farm stats. And so if we provide the feedback to the genetic companies that we need that robustness as part of the pie to make on their selection index, they will make that change, and it'll take a little time, but we'll make progress. But they have to know that's valuable to us. And that's the feedback that can be provided from the barn staff to shareholders, to veterinarians, getting that information back to the genetic company so that they can make those changes.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to jump to Aaron just for a second from what you said. You said they should incorporate the robustness or the toughness factor into the selection for the boars. How many years has it been, Aaron, that you know of where any of the companies, or maybe all the companies, have incorporated some kind of robustness factor into the way they index their semen? Is that factored in all the companies? Some, none?
I would like to think it is factored into all the genetic companies. I think the big question is how it's weighted. Right. Okay. So when we talk about a pie, you know, the index is a pie chart, right? You know, in a perfect world, it would be 100%, right? We'd concentrate 100% on disease robustness, but that's not realistic, right? I mean, we saw that in the dairy industry, right? If you select too heavy on one side, you're going to have some sort of fallout on the other side, right? And so I think, you know, I would say probably in the last 8 years, we've seen them start to incorporate it. And that's been a big product of understanding genomic selection. And as that's happened, then they've been able to start incorporating the phenotypic term in terms of robustness back into their selection.
Okay. All right. No, it's good. Hey, Carrie, so the question I got for you, because the topic is genetics, is you got all this data. How much of it is all or some, or what fraction has really good descriptive, I got this sire line and I got this sow, as far as the parents of the animals, to really start to understand and pick apart genetics? Because that's the question today, is what genetics. Can you tell differences in performance based on genetics? And if so, how clearly can you do it based on your data?
Well, I certainly think we can make a really good shot at it, for sure. So 60% of the data that flows into farm stats is from Pipestone managed sow farms. So we have really good records on sows and boars, and if and when that changes, to have that tied together. We also have another batch of pigs that producers are managing themselves that are not part of the Pipestone flow. And we could pull that in, usually just by sire line on that side, to look at those lines as well. And that gives us a lot of ability to look across a lot of different flows, barns, regions, and see how these genetic lines do.
Okay. So without naming names, when you've looked at it, what kind of differences have you seen between, let's just say, sire line genetics, where you say, yeah, this company's Duroc versus this company's Duroc? Can you tell differences, or like what kind of differences are you seeing? Is it gain, conversion, mortality? Where would you say you see differences between genetics on the observed by records side of things?
I'd say you would definitely see the biggest difference in terms of breeds, as opposed to even, say, within genetic companies. A Duroc's going to eat. a Jurok's going to grow. We kind of know that from just general genetic world. You know, our things we've known for 30, 40 years are still hold true in some of these areas. Some lines are certainly better at conversion. And those things are going to show, but how you weight those is going to be different based on your farm's needs and your farm situation.
When you get that data, this is what I totally don't know, so I'm probably asking a bad question, but you got all this data. Are you able to overlay things like the health status of the origin herd? You know, oh, this is all PRRS ridden, these pigs are, or these are really good pigs, and then do some kind of cross-factoring tables to say, well, these are good Durocs that are healthy. These are really not healthy Durocs and how they perform. Can you look at that within your data and tell differences? I don't know how deep you can actually peel things apart. That's what I'm trying to get at, is how much can you peel it apart?
Absolutely. And that's the first thing I do when I go to try to run any data set is first you got to scrub it and say, do you want to look at just healthy pigs? Or do you want to look at it within, sometimes you want to look at within pigs that do break and see if there is a difference. But pretty much every time I run something, I'm going to try to get just clean pigs most of the time and say, how do they perform within that? There's additional things. We'll usually scrub out PRRS and PED. And we can look at, we can try to get down to the myco levels and the flu levels, but that starts getting a little hairy. But what I really would encourage anyone who participates in farm stats is making sure that that data is only as good as we get it. And so if your pig's wean negative, but it has a break, to make sure we're getting that information communicated back, because that's how we're able to utilize this data. And so we need that feedback individually so that we can try to do these larger comparisons.
Okay. So you both got different types of data. You're making some observations and making some judgments about it. You know, Durocs grow faster. So you got that information. I'll start with Aaron, but how does that information make it to a decision maker's hands to decide what they want to do?
Yeah. So in Pipestone specifically?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we would put this information into what we call like a one-page summary. And so we have a statistician who's blinded to the data. And that's, you know, again, you know, we talk about the difference between our research barn studies and farm stats, right? You know, so we are very intentional about blinding the data and having it analyzed statistically and then walking away with a p-value, whether it's significant or not. And so we can look at, on a wean to finish, you know, basis, was that average daily gain significant? Was that feed conversion significant? And then that will all be put into a nice one-page summary with just some high-level takeaways of the study and any mm-hmm. any limitations, if there were any. And then that would get shared with our vet team and then also given to our production supervisors and our production team. And they will take that out and share that with the Pipestone Network.
Yeah, so Aaron's piece of it I'm really familiar with, because I'll go into a meeting, it'll be some shareholder producers in there saying, well, what's the best whatever? We'll say, well, and you'll say, we found these differences. It's in a research setting, but it looks very promising. And you'll inkle out with some clarity and names and attached to everything of which might be a really good choice for a semen or a sow or whatever. But Carrie, for your end, you've got this really great data. How does that, what's the route to that coming back saying, hey, you really need to try a different boar? Like, for example, if you say Durocs grow fast, boy, you're not making market weight. You need to direct it. I mean, I'm imagining that's maybe what happens, but can you describe how that information goes back to the decision maker?
Well, I try to do some benchmarking. So every 6 months, every year, run some analysis, and genetics is a part of that. Every time I try to run that analysis and share that out with veterinarians and the relationship managers for the sow farms, but also people will come to me anytime they have a request that they want to look at that information. And we can run it for different time periods or different scenarios so they can look at maybe their individual data within a sow farm and how their change worked or didn't work for them. So I'd say if they're a part of farm stats or a part of a managed sow farm, the information is always there to ask. I will share anything that I find as I run data, either regularly or individually, to continue to ask the question. I make a point of saying that the pharmacist data can complement and back up what they have on the research value side with p-values. And we can run statistics on the pharmacist data. It's a little bit harder to pick up some of those changes with the variability that we will see in a larger data set. But it allows us to continually ask the question, why?
One quick observation that's interesting. At the research barn, they'll do a trial, and it'll be some result like, 185 daily gain with 2% wean to finish mortality. And so the producers will listen and say, that's crazy. That's impossible. And then you say, well, it's just a normal barn. We didn't do anything different. It was the same pigs that you get at your barn that we just diverted the flow to our research barn, you know? And so then, well, how does that good? It is pretty impressive just how good these animals will do, and maybe how many times in a barn you might drop the ball because you're busy. You're planting corn and beans. There's, you know, things happen in a regular barn that don't happen in this identical barn, but it just has perfect care every day.
I think a point to that too is, you know, Carrie and I have been talking about this a lot in the last couple of days, but like when the research trial data pairs up with the farm stats data, which 98% of the time it has, it's mm-hmm. really cool. Because then you have confidence in your controlled experimentally designed trial, and you have 4 million pigs worth of information merging mm-hmm. together and telling you the same answer.
Yeah. And I was just thinking that the research barns tend to outperform actual production by some amount, just because probably the attention is perfect attention in a lot of ways versus what a commercial setting might be. The care might be a hair different because of that.
Well, and we have one person managing 2,400 pigs. And so, I mean, if you know, I'm sure commercial guys can, like, you know, they'd roll their eyes at me if they mm-hmm. they heard that. But, you know, we ask our team to do everything, right? I mean, they do everything from fixing a water line to entering data into Excel. And mm-hmm. so the gamut of expectation is very broad. But then they are fully, you know, involved in one trial in that one group of pigs. And so there's more involved there, but they do spend a lot of time with those pigs.
But as you're talking and you're describing things that, you know, without getting into details, mentioned earlier, it's probably not appropriate to share company names and whatnot, but we know a lot of stuff here. And so I don't want to let the podcast end without pointing out that, hey, we know stuff. We work hard to learn stuff. It's expensive to learn stuff. But it's for our producers. It's not meant to be kept under a bushel basket and hidden. You know, you really want to share the stuff, and it's for our clients and our shareholders to know. So if you know somebody within our group, you know, they'll have access within our group to what Carrie's talking about or what Aaron's talking about. And it's meant to help decision makers make better decisions. So I don't want to end this without really pointing that out. If, even though we didn't reveal any specific thing here, there's a lot of stuff that gets known and figured out over the years with some consistent observations that you have confidence in, like, don't hesitate to reach out. So that's really for our listeners. Don't hesitate to reach out. If you've got questions, we want to help you. That's you're our clients or customers. That's what it's there for.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about it a lot on the terminal side, but I would say it echoes itself on the maternal side. And so we have the same level of confidence in the maternal data, the wean to finish performance of how maternal genetics contribute is equally as important to us. So on both terminal and maternal side.
All right, I better wrap it up. Carrie, thank you very much for calling in. Carrie's calling in. Aaron's in the studio with me here. Aaron, thank you for showing up. Good information. Hopefully it gets some of the listeners thinking about things. If you've got questions out there in the listening audience, call in, call me, call somebody, and just, we're here to answer questions. And to our guest today, thank you. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in, and tune in next time for the next episode. Time Podcast was created for the pork industry and individual pork producers around the country, hosted by me, Dr. Spencer Wayne, with the Pipestone Veterinary Services. The podcast contains pork industry news, advancements in animal care, and how to enhance your productivity. Monthly podcasts are available on Spotify, Google Music, iTunes, Anchor, and on www.pipestone.com.